welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice. We hope that you enjoy the program.
Welcome to our May edition of our Third Thursday podcast. I'm Ruthie Goodbow, a labor shareholder with Ogletree Deacons and co-chair of our firm's traditional labor practice. I think this is our third Thursday during the COVID-19 pandemic. And on each of those previous podcasts, we've talked about COVID-19 or an issue relating to COVID-19. Back in late February and March, we were all concerned about how we were going to quarantine, work remotely, work on site with social distancing. Frankly, we were trying to figure out how we were going to live our lives and operate under these new circumstances. A new normal, so to speak, and a new normal that seemed to shift on a daily basis, and frankly, was different depending on what state you were working in or even what county you were operating in. You responded and adapted in often overwhelming circumstances. And based on what I hear from my colleagues and clients and stories I hear in the traditional and in social media, you did it with the overarching aspiration of doing what was right for your employees, customers and clients, and your community as a whole. And everything I hear, all very successful. So now, just as we are starting to feel a little bit comfortable with the new normal, whatever that is, things are changing again with the reopening of America. And with that change comes a whole new learning curve and a whole different set of challenges we're going to have to deal with. So for this month's podcast, I thought I'd just quickly go through a few things to think about as you embark on a return to work plan from a traditional labor perspective. I'm not going to go into the weeds on any of the topics I'm going to cover. It's more of a review and reminder, sort of an issue spotting checklist. All of these topics that I'm going to talk about today are covered on our website and specifically on our COVID resource page in one way or the other. They're recorded webinars, blogs, guides, and FAQs. They are very helpful. And if you can't find what you need, don't be shy about reaching out to me and I'll point you in the right direction. So let's just start off with a review about bargaining obligations. As we talked about at the beginning of the crisis, if you have represented employees represented by a union, and you're going to make changes to terms and conditions of employment as you reopen or revamp your operations to conform with new governmental directives, make sure you go back and look at your CBA to determine whether you have any decisional obligations for the contemplated changes, decisional bargaining obligations for any of the contemplated changes. Some of you may have laid off employees at the beginning of this crisis or at some point during it, and you may have been subject to the provisions of a CBA in terms of how you did those layoffs. Well, the same thing's going to work in reverse. If you're going to start recalling individuals, make sure you're paying attention to your CBA and conforming the recall to those provisions. Remember, even if you have a clear contractual right to implement the changes or a legal obligation to comply with new state or federal directives, more likely than not, you're still going to have an obligation to bargain over the effects of any of those changes. Some of the examples that come to mind just off the top of my head are, for example, in states where temperature checks are now being required, one of the things that may be an effects bargaining you'll have to engage in with the union is whether or not the time waiting to get your temperature taken will be compensable. How that temperature check is going to be taken, who's going to do it, what happens if a person has a higher temperature, will they go home on a paid leave, unpaid leave, those kinds of things, very similar to what was happening at the beginning of the pandemic. Or masks, for example. If masks or face coverings are required, who's going to provide these? Are they going to be provided by the company? Will it be a BYOM, bring your own mask kind of situation? Those are all the types of things that may be encompassed in effects bargaining. Also, as recommended at the outset of this pandemic, we talked about this. Even if the contract gives you the express right, if you think it's clear you have the right to take a particular action without any bargaining obligation with the union, it still probably makes sense to give the union notice of what you're planning to do and how you're planning to do it. You may not be legally required to bargain, but best case scenario, by giving this information, letting the union know this is what you intend to do, you may get the union's buy-in, which can go a long way with employees. Worst case scenario, the union may object to what you're doing or demand bargaining over it, and at least you understand what the union's position is before you take action. Not saying you shouldn't take action, not saying you would have to bargain. Those are all going to be very fact specific, but at least you know where the union is coming from and you may be able to deal with it in a more appropriate way. Next subject, refusals to work. We talked about this, refusals to work because of unsafe conditions. At the beginning of the crisis, people were very frightened. And now, while many laid off or furloughed employees are anxious to return to work, there are also those who, for a variety of reasons, may be either unwilling or unable to return to work. Outside and apart of the labor issues, which I'll address in a minute, when someone says they are unable to return to work, make sure whoever's having that interaction with that employee is mindful of other applicable statutes, Americans with Disabilities Act, FMLA, and also make sure you're aware any leave policies that you may have that your employees may still be able to take advantage of. Where employees refuse to return to work because of safety concerns or in protest, so to speak, over terms related to the reopening or change in operations, those actions are most likely to be protected by the National Labor Relations Act. And if it has to do with safety, they may be protected from retaliation by the OSHA Act. Again, I'm not going to go in the weeds here, but we want to make sure whoever is having the communication with individuals who are being recalled to work or changes in circumstances at work, and they're talking to them, make sure that there's not an overreaction to someone saying, I'm not coming into work, I don't feel it's safe, you haven't done enough, it's too early, the governor's wrong. Whatever the argument is, we don't want these folks to have a knee-jerk reaction. We want them to collect up the information from the employee, ask questions, make sure there's an understanding of what's happening, and then reach out to your legal or HR team so that a proper response can be formulated. And just a quick reminder that that right to refuse to come back to work or refuse to work based on safety concerns or other concerns with terms and conditions of employment, that's a right that's protected for employees who are not represented by a union and also those who are represented by a union. And even in certain circumstances, even where a unionized employee is subject to a no-strike provision in a collective bargaining agreement, if it is what's known as a safety strike, and there's all kinds of details surrounding that, they still may engage in a refusal to work. Again, I'm going to direct you to our COVID page. We have some great FAQs on refusals to work. I believe we had a webinar this week on refusals to work. We record those and you can listen, but get more information. But again, issue spotting here. Next, let's just talk in general about deadlines and timelines. Just like all of us, the union's energy has been focused on what they felt or what they saw were more immediate matters facing their members related to COVID-19. As the restrictions loosen and the sense of urgency and the sense of emergency begins to wane, the union's going to refocus their energy, and some of that energy will be refocused on litigating issues that may have come up during the height of the crisis, either through grievance procedures if you have a unionized workforce, or through unfair labor practice charges, which can be filed whether you're unionized or not, and they can be filed by a union or an individual. Things the union may have allowed employers to do without interference during the intensity of the pandemic may now become problematic. It goes to show, it goes to reason, I guess I would say, They may have let things slide during the height of the crisis. They may not have interfered with things that you were doing that may have violated collective bargaining agreement, or maybe could have been seen as a violation of the National Labor Relations Act, and they may have let you slide. That's probably going to change. So I raise this to make a few points that raise this deadlines and timelines. Be mindful of contractual deadlines and timelines in your grievance procedure if you're a party to a collective bargaining agreement. Also, be responsive to requests for information from the union. Even if your initial response is to say you're going to be delayed in providing the information requested, don't ignore it. You've heard me say that 100 times. That's about the worst thing you can do, is just ignore requests for information. If you have contracts approaching expiration, be sure not to miss any notice requirements for modifying or terminating bargaining agreements. It's hard to predict whether unions are going to want to let contracts automatically renew because they may be afraid employers are going to try and take some things away on the heels of the COVID pandemic. But frankly, the unions may want to get in there and try to negotiate some things that came to light as a result of the pandemic. Even those without union-represented employees, as I said before, may be subject to unfair labor practice charges, claiming violations of protected employee rights that may have occurred during the crisis. Just so you know, the statute of limitations for ULP charges is generally 180 days, but can reach longer under continuing violations or related event-type theories. So just because an issue or potential claim was not raised at the time of the particular event doesn't mean that the risk of a charge has gone away. So why do I say that? I say that because as you're dealing with these issues now, make sure you pay attention and you keep implementing your best practices as to investigations and documentation, because we don't know what's going to happen down the road. And at 179 days, union or an individual may decide, you know, I'm still upset about what happened almost 6 months ago, and file a charge. I couldn't end this podcast without talking about the new reality. And I know we've been throwing those terms around. The last point I want to make about that is we've got to get prepared for the new reality in organizing, related to elections, in bargaining, in how charges are processed. I'm not sure I can think of any aspect of labor relations or traditional labor law that will be the same post-COVID as it was pre-COVID. Let's take organizing itself. Unions were already working to master the use of social media and virtual interaction group platforms for communicating with and mobilizing employees. Think about it. It's amazing how quickly you can adapt to something when you have no choice, when you have to. We've all done that in the last months. Think about it. Think about how you've adapted to the new technologies, new ways to do work, new ways to communicate. You had to do it, so you did do that. Now we've got to take that experience. Use this time now as you get a breath, when you have some time, when you have a few moments. Think about how you've communicated with your team during the crisis and how you can learn from it. What worked well? What could do better? What alternate forms of communications really could make an impact on your workforce? You want to be able to try and harness those new platforms, those new vehicles, to try and strengthen your relationship with your workforce. We've also seen this kind of move to different technologies just in the processes around some of the traditional labor issues, whether it's mail ballots, remote hearings, virtual bargaining. These will all be more prevalent for at least a while. And while there may not be much we can do to change that right now, by necessity, we'll have to get better at using these technologies. The problem is, as we all get better at these technologies, the board, the union, us, the more likely these things are going to stay around even after the pandemic is over. I'm not saying that they're going to automatically be the normal course of business as opposed to being the exception, but we have to be prepared. So because we will get better at these technologies, we must get better at these technologies. And we have to learn to use them to our leverage. Finally, I guess I would just say, I know I've talked about the new normal and the new reality and the changes. And over the last couple of months, I've probably talked about those things in a fairly negative way. Maybe we all have. But as you are returning folks to work, as states start to reopen, this is also an opportunity for you to develop the new normal that you want. The new normal for the positive, for the better in terms of employee relations and communications. Yes, there's a lot of constraint, there are a lot of restrictions and rules out there, but only you can decide how you will go forward. This is a great opportunity. It's almost not really a clean slate, but we're almost at a clean slate because you can start things anew, you can do things differently, you can learn from this experience and take the positives, and there were some positives that came out of this. You can take those experiences and put them into action. When you're doing this, make sure you involve your employees where you can. Get their feedback and ideas. Remember what they said during this crisis. Listen to their voice. Learn from this experience and put it into action. Well, that's about all the time I have today. I appreciate you taking time out of what I know is a very busy schedule to listen to me today. And I'm actually going to forego my usual closing quote, because I found a different one that I think is a lot better and much more apropos for the situation we're in now. Start by doing what's necessary, then do what's possible, and suddenly you're doing the impossible. Francis of Assisi. I like those words. I've been trying to use those words as I move through the progression of this situation. And so I wish you all the best. Stay well. And take care.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended or to be construed as legal advice.